Hello and welcome. It's back, folks. We have heard your demands. The Big East Breakdown is making its triumphant return here in the 2020-2021 season. Obviously, it's been a little hit and miss with the games being played. So it's been a little tough to get together a week's worth of games for a Big East Breakdown. But we've heard the demands. We've heard the cries. People keep stopping me on the street saying, when's Big East Breakdown going to be back? And so back by popular demand. Part of that's true. I don't think anyone has stopped me on the street in quite some time. And if they have, they probably don't know I do this. So that part was a complete fabrication. But I'm here joined by Fat James Harden himself. Braden, how you doing?
I'm good. It's good to be back. You know, when we lost out on the end of the Big East Breakdown last year, I was pretty heartbroken. So it's good to be back in our element, you know.
Lost episode. Full disclosure, we recorded an episode. Brad decided not to air it. It was too X rated, I think. Either that or Brad just forgot he had it until it was way too late to be appropriate. If you're the Fat James Harden, I would be like the Fat Jameer Nelson or something. I'd have to be the fat version of someone who's already kind of fat. But anyway, we're going to get into it. We've got several games to cover from the past week, and we went ahead and waited until some of today's results were in. We're recording this on Saturday, the 23rd. But the first thing we want to start with is Marquette 73, St. John's 71. This one was from last Saturday. A close game here at St. John's, Braden. How did Marquette end up pulling this one off?
Well, they actually did their best to lose it for a lot of the game. They had a big lead. St. John's came back into it doing a lot of pressing, and then Marquette got just enough to get it across the line. It was actually Marquette's bench that came up big. We had talked about their bench depth not being the greatest, but Greg Elliott and Justin Lewis both chipped in 13 points off the bench. Elliott was 2 of 3 from 2 and 3 of 5 inside from beyond the arc. Justin Lewis was 4 of 5 from inside the arc and was 5 of 6 from the line. So that was really big for them. Other than that, DJ Carton put in 14. I think he's been pretty good this year for the Golden Eagles. Theo John only had 9, but he's Theo John, so what do you expect? Kobe McEwen didn't have the greatest game, but then Dawson Garcia also had 11. But for Marquette, in a game that they got really close and probably made things a little too difficult for themselves, their bench really came up big. And St. John's did force a lot of turnovers. They forced 19 turnovers out of them. 12 of those were steals. Posh Alexander had 5 of those, but I'll let you talk about what St. John's did to get back into this.
Yeah, I mean, St. John's, it was all about Julian Champagne once again. He continues to be kind of a breakout star for them this year. He was 5 of 11 from deep this year, this game, which kind of continues his trend. He's shooting 45% from 3 since Big East play started. And he was the one who had it going as far as scoring goes. Greg Williams chipped in 15. He was 6 of 13 from the floor. But what ended up killing St. John's is they really couldn't get anyone but those two going. Vince Cole, who's had some big games for him, only had 5 points in this game. He was 2 of 8 from the field. He was pretty limited in his contribution. Did pull down 5 boards, but just couldn't get it going as far as scoring. And when they lacked that punch, Rasheem Dunn was 1 of 6 from the floor. Alexander was 4 of 8 from the floor. It just they didn't quite have anyone else that they could throw it to and get a bucket other than Williams and Champagne. And that's what ended up costing them down the stretch. It stalled out for them a little bit. The illustrious Marcellus Erlington only had 5 points. It's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking to see him struggle like that. And Dylan Adeiwusu, just shout out to him because he managed to foul out in 14 minutes in this game. So good job to him. That's an incredible amount of fouling. So But anyway, yeah, Champagne and Williams were really all they had going there. Moving on to a game I'd rather not talk about, but Creighton went to Hinkle Fieldhouse. I'm assuming there was some clock screwiness here, and lost to Butler in overtime, 70-66. So when the score is 70-66 in overtime, there's a great chance that it was not a great ball game, and in fact, it was not. So how did Creighton manage to lose this game? I mean, they led by 13 with 8 minutes left. How did they blow it?
They blew it by simply they could not buy a bucket after that kind of 7:38 mark, which was their biggest lead of the game. Denzel Mahoney went off for him, though. He had 29 points, and he was 5 of 11 from 2 and 3 and pulled in 7 boards. Outside of him, though, Christian Bishop had 10 and Jefferson had 12. But other than that, they really couldn't get any buckets going for them. They were 6 of 23 from beyond the arc. So Sharif Mitchell was actually the only other player of the Mahoney to hit a three. Mitch Ballack really did not have a good night. He was 1 of 6 shooting. So late in the game, as Butler made the comeback, they really keyed in on like Mahoney and Jefferson because Ballack was not much of a threat in this game. It should be noted that Zagorowski did not play. He was still out. I believe he had a minor injury during this game. But yeah, for Creighton, they really couldn't get the three to fall for them. They shot really well from inside the arc, but they really didn't lean into it enough. And down the stretch, Mahoney was just about the only thing they had going. And ultimately, Butler was able to get the stops and then get some buckets, and that turned it around really quickly.
Yeah, Arian Thompson had a rare efficient scoring. Well, not that efficient, but he had a night where he was their leading scorer. He had 17. He was 7 of 14 from the floor, which isn't great, but he had 6 assists and 1 turnover. So that it was a really great game from him, to be honest. And then Bryce and Z had 15 points, although he was pretty inefficient as well. And Miles Tate had 15 points. To go along with that, Chuck Harris came off the bench with 10. The thing with Butler was they were able to find their feet late in this one. They went on a 17-2 run over the final, well, 17-4 is how much they outscored Creighton by over the final 8 minutes of regulation. But it really should not have been that close of a game. Creighton just did not close it out very well. And Butler was able to overcome the fact that they only shot 64% from the line to win. And that was a big win for them because they kind of had been struggling. They were down to 100th in KenPom before this game, and they really needed something to kind of kickstart their season. They got it in the form of that game, which again, Creighton had to walk away from that one wondering how they had managed to lose it. Speaking of games that people wonder how they managed to lose, Connecticut somehow lost to St. John's at home. Well, I say somehow. You're going to tell me how. So how did that happen? Obviously, they're without James Booknight, but they also led by as many as 14 in this game. So how on earth did they go on to lose it?
They completely collapsed. There's no other way to describe it. They had this one in the bag for all intents and purposes. They were up by 14, only 8 minutes into the game. They held the lead for pretty much the entirety of the rest of the game. St. John's largest lead was the 4 that they won by. And that was decided pretty late on some free throws. But UConn, without Booknight, I mean, they were clicking early, but when it started to get tight towards the end, and St. John's did speed them up, when they got tight towards the end, they did not have a guy that they were throwing the ball to as their go-to guy. That's what we'd seen Booknight do for them late last year. So far this year, he's been the guy. Without him, they did look a little lost towards the end of this game. RJ Cole did have a good night. He had 18 points. Tyrese Martin had 14. Adama Sanogo had 12, but all those guys, that was a balanced scoring output. But outside of those three, they didn't get anybody in double figures, and they had 14 turnovers to only 14 assists. So you can kind of see that when the pressure was on, the ball stopped moving a little bit. And you know, as well as they were playing earlier in this game, they just were not able to keep it flowing. And then especially with, like I said, Book Knight being out, it was kind of hard for them to get a bucket out of one dude going late in this game when St. John's really sped them up.
Yeah, for St. John's, Posh Alexander really kind of stepped to the fore. He had 18 points. He was 6 of 11 from the floor. He dished out 6 assists, only had 3 turnovers. It was a great game from him. Champagne added 12, although he did not have his most efficient night. He was only 2 of 9 from the floor and had 1 assist to 4 turnovers. But they got double digits from 5 different players. Adai Wusu was able to keep himself on the floor long enough to score 10 points. His royal thickness, Martellus Erlington, 15 points in 20 minutes. What a beast. He was 5 of 8 from the floor. Just, you know, Big East player of the year, Martellus Erlington. Is it too early to say it? No. It was a good performance. So St. John's, especially in the second half. And once again, you got Posh Alexander coming out and having, you know, probably his best game of his college career so far. He was good against St. Peter's, I guess, on the first night, but matched his career high in scoring and had 3 steals as well to go with that. So it certainly was what they needed from him. They didn't get anything from Vince Cole. They barely got anything from Isaiah Moore. And Greg Williams only played 6 minutes. So huge performance from Posh Alexander and St. John's, kind of keeping themselves above water in the race to not finish dead last. Although I got to be honest, DePaul is putting on an absolute masterclass in finishing dead last in the conference. So I don't know that there's a lot St. John's is going to be able to do about that this year anyway. And speaking of DePaul, they were at home against Butler and they were not particularly competitive. Now, they did actually have a game where they won this week. They beat Valparaiso for their second win of the season. But we're not going to talk about that because Valparaiso is not in the Big East. DePaul is, although by all rights, they should get relegated. And they lost 67-53 to Butler. So defend DePaul's program for me. Is there any point in it continuing?
No, and they should get relegated to the American. There's just absolutely no reason that they should be in the Big East right now. Charlie Moore, as much as I love to defend that guy, mostly because I think it's funny, because I don't think he's actually that good. He had 11 points and shot a tragic 1 of 7 from 3. Had 3 turnovers with only 2 assists. Kobe Elvis actually came off the bench for 12 points. He was 3 of 5 inside the arc, 1 of 3 from 3. So, you know, hope for the future? Probably not. It's DePaul. But they do have a guy. I know everybody on Twitter has seen it. They do have a guy named Paulie Cap, which I think is just hilarious. He went for 4 points and shot 50%, had 8 boards. But outside of a hilarious name and a freshman coming off the bench for 12, no, DePaul had absolutely nothing going in this game. And Butler, who's looked, I mean, they did beat Creighton, but they have looked really pedestrian so far this year. They walked away from them. DePaul never had the lead in this game, and Butler led 52-27 with 12 minutes to play and clearly let their foot off the gas a little bit. It was just it was a very bad game to watch, I imagine. I couldn't have been bothered to watch it personally.
I mean, you're talking about the names on DePaul. They have a guy named whose last name is Freeman Liberty. He is all about personal rights, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, Butler, they got 21 from Jer Bolden, who I think, to be honest, has been probably a bit of a letdown for them this year. They were expecting him to come in and kind of fill that gap that Baldwin and McDermott left, and he's not been that good, to be honest. Anyway, he had a good game. He had 21 points. Miles Tate had 10. Bryce Golden had 10. Chuck Harris had 10. You'll never convince me Chuck Harris didn't play in like the 1960s, but that's neither here nor there. And Bryson Z, shouts to him, he pulled down 13 defensive rebounds and still managed to get a O rating under 100. So good job, Bryce. Anyway, Butler, really all they needed to do is show up to beat DePaul, and they did that. So congrats. Moving on to games between teams that probably are going to matter this year. Seton Hall went to Finneran Pavilion and barely came out on the wrong end, 76-74 against Villanova. Who got it done for the Wildcats here?
Unfortunately, it was Colin Gillespie. I hate saying that, but it was true. He had 22 points. His O rating was 137 on KenPom. He was 4 of 5 from two, 2 of 5 from beyond the arc, and 8 of 8 from the line. He did have 2 turnovers, though. So, you know, there's something that he didn't do well. But yeah, he was really excellent in this game. Jermaine Samuels played 32 minutes and also had 20 points, and he had 9 boards to go with that, with an assist and no turnovers, because he plays the game the right way. But yeah, those two guys really carried the Wildcats. Justin Moore had 10. Robinson Earl didn't really have a great game. Cole Swider hit a free throw late that kind of put Nova up 2 with the just cluster cuss of fouls and stoppages that were going on to end this game. But yeah, they got just enough out of Samuels and Gillespie to get the win in what was a really tight game, and really a really big win since they hadn't played in what seemed like about 5 years. But yeah, that was enough for him to get this win.
Yeah, I mean, for Seton Hall, Sandro Mamukelashvili had a great night as far as scoring goes. He had 23 points. He was 8 of 14 from the floor. He had 9 boards, 5 assists. That was everything you want from him. The 7 turnovers is probably what they did not want from him. He had more than the entire rest of his team combined. So that was, I mean, obviously, probably Kevin Willard at some point was like, Sandro, throw it to our team, dude. But Jared Roden, who's a personal hero of mine, had 19 and 4 boards. Didn't dunk all over Butler's stupid faces this game, but I still love him anyway. And then Miles Kale and Shamar Reynolds both had 11 points, but they didn't really get much from the bench. Tyree Samuel had 4, Tecal Molson had 4, and Bryce Aiken went scoreless. So when you get 50 minutes out of your bench and you get 8 points against Villanova at Villanova, it's probably not going to go well for you. Villanova shot 40% from 3, and Seton Hall turned the ball over 13 times to Villanova's 9. So when you do things like that against Villanova, you're doing well to be in the game late, and Seton Hall was in the game late. Bit of a questionable call at the end there, to be honest. Seton Hall probably deserved more from this game, but it was still a really good performance from them. That won't really be a lot of consolation to them, but they're still right up there in the hunt to, I think, get a bye in on the first night of the Big East tournament, if Big East tournament happens, which, you know, it's questionable if anything's going to happen at this point. Basketball is hurtling toward, it seems like, a non-conclusion to the season. But anyway, if the season does end, one team that is probably going to factor into the Big East race at the end of it is Creighton, although they didn't have a great week because at home against Providence, they came up on the wrong end again. Providence 74, Creighton 70. Braden, why don't you talk about how great Nate Watson is?
Why'd you have to make me do this? Okay, Nate Watson. He did have a great game against Creighton. He went for 29 points, 8 boards. He did have 2 turnovers, though, so I don't know what his deal is there. But yeah, he was really sensational in this game. He was 12 and 19 from inside the arc, and he was the go-to guy. Providence went to him a lot early. They went to him a lot late, and he delivered for him. David Duke didn't really have a good game. His shooting was bad, to say the least. He had 5 assists and 5 turnovers as well. AJ Reeves didn't do a whole lot offensively, but it was Watson, and then Alan Breed actually had a really good night. I don't know if you're supposed to say that Alan or Aline, or I don't know why he put a Y in his name. That's just stupid in my opinion, but he did chip in 15 points, had 6 boards, and then 3 assists and only 1 turnover. So in a game where they led, they had a big lead early. And I mean, Watson asserted himself down low and they kept going to him. And then Breed stepped up when their other guys were not really their usual guys were not filling it up for them.
Yeah. They jumped out 23-6 in this game. They really kind of took control at the beginning, and Creighton was chasing them all game and just could never quite reel them in. Creighton never held the lead. I'm confused as to why you think Alan Breed named himself, but that's not here nor there. Damian Jefferson had a good game for Creighton. He had 26 points. He was 9 of 13 from the floor. He did only shoot 7 of 12 from the line. Creighton shot themselves in the foot from the line. They only shot 66%. And they only had 8 assists this game on 25 made baskets. It was a not un-Creighton-like performance, to be honest. They didn't shoot the three particularly well. If only 4 of 23 from deep. And like I said, when the shots aren't falling and they're not assisting a lot of their own baskets, Creighton, that's two signs that Creighton's offense just isn't working right. Mitch Ballack was 0 of 3 from deep. Denzel Mahoney was 0 of 5 from deep. Jefferson and Zegarowski were the only ones to hit threes for them. So, if they can't get the ball to fall from beyond the arc and it's not moving like it needs to, they're going to have a hard time. They did do pretty well as far as the rebounding goes. They kept Providence mostly quiet on the glass, but they couldn't get a lot of their own misses back, which was a problem because there were so many of them. And it was just one of those nights for Creighton that nothing seemed to work. But they were able to redeem themselves today on Saturday because they hosted Connecticut. And they were able to come away with the victory. So why don't you talk about who Creighton has to thank for stopping the rot, stopping the losing streak at 2, and getting them a win to try and get this season back on track.
Well, Denzel Mahoney came up big today. He went for 20 points. He shot 8 of 14. He had 3 boards and an assist. So that's another game this last week that he's really stepped up big for him. Marcus Zegarowski, he had a pretty decent night, 15 points. He shot 5 of 10. He didn't shoot too well from beyond the arc, but he also had 2 assists. This was another game. They only had 8 assists, but they clearly had enough to get the win. This one was really tight at the half, but the second half, their shooting picked up a lot. They shot 57% from inside the arc and 37% from 3 in the second half. So that really, really got them the boost that they needed. They did shoot very badly from the line. They were 20 of 32 from the line, but clearly they were able to get just enough to get the win here. Damian Jefferson also had 13, and then Ryan Kalkbrenner, who's been pretty decent this year, hasn't had a lot of huge scoring nights, but he came up for 10 and also had 4 boards to go with that. So yeah, they got a balanced scoring night, but once again, Mahoney was leading the way, and he's been pretty good for them in the Big East play so far this year.
Yeah, Connecticut, once again, you could tell they just needed somebody who could take the game over, like a James Bouknight type. Adama Sanogo had 13. He had a pretty good game, although I am giving him the Qudus Wahab Award for fouling like it's going out of style, because he picked up 5 fouls in 20 minutes to go with his 5 turnovers. So it was good and bad. It was a Jekyll and Hyde performance from Adama Sanogo. But you know, he did have 13 points on 5 of 9 shooting. So there's definitely a lot to like there from Connecticut. There are some things to clean up though. RJ Cole led him in scoring. He had 14, 4 of 10 from the floor. He had 5 assists and 2 turnovers. It was a good game, but they needed somebody that they could throw the ball to and get them a basket. Isaiah Whaley had a really bad shooting night, 4 of 13 from the floor. Tyrese Martin chipped in with 11. He also fouled out, but he did it in 33 minutes, so I'm not going to make fun of him. And, I really didn't have anybody who was able to score the ball very efficiently at all. So that brings us to our final game, which was at Finneran Pavilion, and it was Villanova 71, Providence 56. They probably didn't need to play this one. because Villanova was always going to win this. But why did Villanova win this?
Well, once again, Colin Gillespie had an annoyingly good game. He went for 15 points, 6 assists, and only had 1 turnover, and also had 5 boards. So he had a really good night for him. Justin Moore also had 15. He actually shot 6 of 14, was only 1 of 6 from beyond the arc, so he was getting it pretty well inside the arc. Jeremiah Robinson-Earl, once again, did not really have a great night. He was only 4 of 11. With 9 points and 5 boards. But Jermaine Samuels got another double-double. He had 10 points, 10 rebounds, and then he had 4 assists with no turnovers. So that's been a couple games where he's really stuffed the stat sheet and been very efficient with the ball and not turned it over. So he's had a couple really good games there. As a team, Nova did not shoot that well from 3. They were only 7 of 25, but then the first half, their shooting was pretty abysmal. The second half, they really picked it up. They shot 48% from inside the arc in the second half, and that was enough to get them the win here when they really, really were making things complicated for themselves in the first half.
Yeah, Providence, I mean, the star turn was Alan Breed, fresh off your criticism of how his parents chose to spell his name. He had 18. He was only 5 of 8 from the floor, but went 6 of 7 from the line and had 11 boards, 4 assists, and 1 turnover. So it was a really good all-around performance from Alan Breed. But David Duke kind of had a stinker. He had 10 points. He was 4 of 17 from the floor. He did have 11 rebounds, but he had 4 assists to go with 6 turnovers. And then Nate Watson also turned the ball over 4 times. Actually, as a team, Providence turned it over 19 times. You can't really do that against Villanova unless you're going to just shoot the lights out, which they also did not do. So, they played a sloppy game at Villanova and they lost. That's what's going to happen. So, Big East player of the week, who do you have?
I've got Denzel Mahoney because a thing that impresses me about basketball players is when they score a lot of points. And Denzel Mahoney did that in 2 of the 3 games he's played in the last week. He obviously had that big 29-point game in a losing effort at Hinkle. He had a really good game there and was really the only thing Creighton had going for him when the game got tight down the stretch. And then today, in another big game against UConn, he came up with 20 points. So, you know, he was the Big East's 6th man of the year last year, and I think this year he's really really stepped up and plugged in to that starting 5 nicely. I don't think he's, you know, a Tyshawn Alexander replacement, you know, but he is really filling that role where they can go to him, and on his nights he can just be a guy that's going to get them buckets, and that's what they've needed, and he's really stepped up to the plate there.
Gotcha. Much as it pains me to do it, I think I'm going to have to say Colin Gillespie just because he had 2 really good games this week. Against Seton Hall, he led them in scoring with 22 points, had a really efficient scoring night, went 8 for 8 from the line. And then against Providence, the shot wasn't falling as well, but he was able to turn around then and give out 6 assists, 1 turnover, and had 15 points in that one as well. And apparently never misses free throws. It's been like a month since he missed a free throw, although they haven't played very much in that month. So, Colin Gillespie, gross. I respect my list for having said that. But anyway, our big question, I guess, as we kind of head toward February, it's about a week away. How is it looking as far as who has a shot at the tournament? If you had to guess right now, who has a crack at the tournament? The NCAA tournament, obviously, out of Big East teams.
I mean, I think the teams at the top are obviously going to get in. You've got Nova, Creighton. I think Seton Hall and UConn are pretty safe bets to get in. I really like X and Marquette as well. Providence, I know you're not as high on them, but I think they're one of those teams that is kind of on the cusp of it. If they pick up a couple big wins in the conference, I think they have a shot of getting into the tournament. But, you know, they've still got a lot of work to do because they don't really have any bad losses so far, but they don't have a lot of great wins either. So if they are going to get in, they're going to need to pick up some big wins like they did against Creighton. But I think that the Big East could, in theory, be sending, you know, a majority of the conference. I think Butler, St. John's, Georgetown, and DePaul are pretty much out of it. I don't know that there's a lot that they're going to be able to do. I mean, unless they get scalding hot and just rip the top half of the conference to shreds, but I don't really see that happening. But I think 1 through 7 has a pretty decent chance of getting there. 1 through 5 for sure, though.
Yeah, I don't see it with Providence this year. Just because if you look at what they did in the non-conference, they didn't really help themselves at all. They beat Davidson, which is their best non-conference win. They didn't have any bad losses. They lost to Alabama, who's really, really good this year. Indiana, who's having a pretty good year. But they need some big wins in the conference. They got one at Creighton. But if they can't pick up another win against a Creighton or a Villanova, which they don't play Creighton anymore this year. So if they can't pick up a win against Villanova, which is their last game of the year, I mean, they just have to stack a lot of wins right now. I just don't see them doing it. Their upcoming schedule is Marquette, Georgetown, Seton Hall, St. John's. If those four games, if they don't win at least three of them, I just don't see how they can do it. I don't see it with Providence this year. I think Marquette set themselves up decently with what they did the non-conference. They picked up a big win against Wisconsin. And again, they didn't have any bad losses. I don't know about Seton Hall just because their marquee out-of-conference win is Penn State. So it'll be down to what they can do in the rest of the conference season as well, which they've started well. But they have a pretty brutal stretch coming up where they're Creighton and Villanova back to back, and then they go to Providence and Connecticut, their next four games. So again, they and Providence, I think their seasons are going to be greatly shaped by their next four games. And then I think Xavier is in right now, but they're on the cusp. And when they get back playing, who knows what their schedule is going to look like. So it could be a case that, they get hot at the right time, or it could be a case that, you know, they get back and they're still missing people and they take some tough losses that way. But as of right now, their next two games are Butler and DePaul. And I think that would be a good way to ease back into it. But yeah, I think the top four probably are pretty safe bets: Villanova, Creighton, Xavier, and Connecticut. Seton Hall and Marquette, I would think, will get in. I don't see it with Providence, and Butler, St. John's, Georgetown, DePaul are kind of kidding themselves if they think they're going to get a at-large bid. And I'm not confident a Big East tournament's going to be played this year, so it could just be those guys are out of luck. I will cry no real tears if Butler does not get a chance at the NCAA tournament this year. But anyway, that's it from us. So we hope you guys enjoyed it, the return of Big East Breakdown. We know you've missed it. We know that your lives have just, you know, been so terrible without it. So we're back for now. We probably aren't going to do this again this year, but who knows? But anyway, thank you so much for listening. And we hope that we'll be able to catch up with you guys soon and hopefully talk about some Xavier basketball, but, you know, just college basketball in general.